going on out there, friends? And thanks again so much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, COVID Cam. Just kidding, I'm clean as a pin. But joining me today is Kyle Felsen.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, we're in studio together this week.
We're holding hands right now. Right.
I know last week was a little bit odd, but, you know, everybody's been going through this. He had to quarantine himself, and we tried to do a remote show. I think it turned out okay. I did get a few emails where people were, what's up with the audio? I'm like, did you not listen to the recent one? But, yeah, it's good. I'm glad everybody in your house is doing good.
Oh,
I
know, we're great
glad you're
now.
Doing good, and it's awesome to be back at Skeleton Studios, firing on all cylinders.
You know what was crazy this time? It's like I didn't have the cough. I didn't have like the flu-like feeling in your chest or like the cold. But what I did have this time that I did not have last time at all was fever. And I don't mean once or twice. I'm talking for like 3 days. I would either be like burning up or
cold.
Have the chills, man. And it would just swing back and forth. It was wild, but it never got like super high fever, right? Like, I'm not talking about that. Like, it was very mild. Body ache, yeah, I hurt. Like, I hurt bad for those 3 days of having that fever, like the flu aches.
Yeah.
But that was it, man. I didn't lose my taste and I didn't lose any of the stuff. Basically, everything that I missed the first time, I had a little body ache, you know, and whatnot. But almost everything I missed the first time is kind of what I got the second time.
Yeah, right. Did you watch Stranger Things, the newest season?
Yes, I did.
What are your thoughts?
I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoy it. But as everyone knows, and it's kind of a deal, we're D&D junkies already. So them really adding all that stuff into Dungeons & Dragons is great.
I like that part of the show because it kind of reminds me of what our childhood was like. That's literally stuff we would do. You know, this was back before smartphones.
Did you like the Metallica jam?
Yeah, of course.
Right? The Mighty Met.
It's a pretty cool time in our lives, and it's a good reflection of the way it was. Speaking of movies, me and Luke went to watch the new Minions movie. That was pretty good. Yeah,
I like the Minions stuff, man.
Who
I think it's funny.
I like the movies that are just as entertaining for the adults as the kids, right?
Yes.
Where sometimes you feel like some of those older movies, you're like, well, this is just for kids only. You're kind of bored. But the new ones, I don't feel that way. And then did you see the news? Okay, we got a couple things in the news. And I know lots of people have sent this in. And I appreciate everybody for sending this in. But number one is they think that somebody had claimed that there could be megalodons still.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if this is out there because it's just about to be Shark Week. And, you know, Discovery Channel has been doing Shark Week for quite a while. Well, Nat Geo, I guess, one-upped them because it's Shark Month over there.
They're
doing 4 weeks.
My wife found it, sadly, yes.
So do you think that this megalodon article is just trying to boost that? Because it seems like every year close to Shark Week, something like this happens. Or?
No, it's real.
Yeah, or are they still really out there? I mean, the ocean is a very big place.
Yeah.
So to claim,
I think it's there, man. But you know how I am. Everybody knows. All y'all send me messages and memes and all kinds of stuff about the ocean and videos of sharks. Like, I hate all of that. But yeah, so I think it's. I posted a thing today or yesterday, whenever it was, talking about the same deal, saying that you should never. The reason that we go to space is to get further away from the ocean. The reason we don't know what's going on down there is because we don't need to know what's going on down there.
Right. The ocean is a very scary place. And the other. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, have you seen. I wanted to bring this up and I've been meaning to talk to you about it. Coyote Peterson claims to found like the Bigfoot skull.
That's what I was going to bring
up.
That's another story. Yep. That's the one I was going to talk about is this giant skull. Now, again, is this just trying to build up hype for a new season of his show or is this authentic?
Well, I know that Live Science did an article about it saying that that not only they believe it's a primate skull, most primatologists and people that have looked at that says, yeah, it's not. Like what you would think it would be. Like, it looks like a monkey skull, right? Or an ape skull, rather. But they also say, and it looks cast. That's not what a skull would look like.
Texture,
something. So they believe, and even, I believe even Live Science even talks about they believe it as a fake.
Yeah, unfortunate if that's true, because I was hoping it's real, right?
I wanted it to, dude, I want these things to be real so bad. That would have been amazing to find something like that.
I think everybody does. And also, like just like a month ago, everybody was sending us the photograph, that closed circuit television picture of like a upright walking dog man outside of Amarillo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it turns out that some people started really looking into that photo and they said, hey, where did this picture originate from? And it was taken off of a video camera. They're like, well, let us see the video then. And the people were real standoffish about letting the video come to light.
Oh.
Once they saw the video, it's just a guy walking. It's a person. But like, I guess it was distorted for a second. And if you take a screenshot, it looks like
moment.
Looks like something that's not really there. That's why they didn't want to release the video. So it's very cool. I wish it was a dog man, folks. But once again, I don't think that this is a legitimate photograph. But when it comes to dog man, I got a question for you.
Yeah. Don't ask me that. You told me you weren't going to ask me that on air. I said, I think they look like peoples, not dogs. So go ahead.
Okay. Werewolves, right? Yeah. Why do you think werewolves are scary? And are dog men werewolves? Are those humans that have transformed, these are lycanthropes, into these dog men when they're seen? Or are they just always a dog man?
Man, this is that's some good questions, right? I'd like to believe, you know what? It would be more fun to believe that the dog men now were the stories of the werewolves. That all the dog men that we have seen are people that have encountered are actually people that have shifted into it. That they're actually shifters out there. That's what I want to believe.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's, well, cause
but
that's,
not to cut you off, I do know that when you see werewolves, they... It depends on what depicts them. Usually they have human hands and human legs, and then the big, hairy, muscular wolf body and the face. But then if you go off of, like, Luke's favorite show, right, and then you're going to get the American Werewolf, he turned into a giant wolf.
Yeah.
So could there be an in-between now? I don't know. I'm going to believe from now on dog men are just werewolves.
Well, and so if with going with that.
Yeah.
A werewolf is a human that
yes.
once a month or wherever, or whenever there's a full moon becomes a wolf for a couple hours.
But didn't Luke see a were-man?
Well, he did one time. But yeah. you know what I'm saying. It's yeah. a human that becomes a wolf for a few hours when the full moon's out.
Yes.
And then we're all supposed to be deathly afraid of it, right?
Yes.
But wolves are wolves all the time. So shouldn't they be scarier?
Well, they are to me. But yeah.
Right? They're yeah. wolves all the time.
All
a
the
werewolf
time.
Is only a wolf for like 4 hours.
See, it's exactly. That's right? a stellar point. But yes,
and
well,
I don't
like them.
And they're gigantic. Like when you see a photograph in a wolf, it doesn't do it any justice. Those things are huge. I know a lot of people, when you started doing the upright walking hyena sightings and stuff, I don't think most people realize how big hyenas are
yeah.
or hyenas if you're Luke.
I didn't realize how big they were until I saw those fellas walking them around with chains on their necks, right? When they look like gangsters
that.
In Africa with AK-47s walking hyenas.
That is
pretty
cool.
Or they'll have a baboon that walks their hyena.
And like the biting strength of like a wolf and a hyena is ridiculous. I mean, they can just crush bone like no problem.
What in the hyena the most? Because isn't the hyena like the only animal that can crush an elephant bone
it
or
might
something?
Be, it might be the strongest of mammals, but I think like crocodiles.
Yeah, and I'm not talking about I'm talking about like the dogs or whatnot.
Yeah, like a mammal. Like,
yeah, it's crazy.
I think you're right. I know it's an insane amount of pressure.
Man, and then
because they can just go through bone like butter.
So what are you saying? So what do you think? Are you more afraid of wolves than a werewolf?
Yes. Because wolves are always wolves. Just don't go out on full moon nights. Just lock yourself inside.
And you don't have to handle. Why? You know, maybe that's true. But maybe there's way more shifters than we know. But how come we don't ever hear people being caught mid-shift, right?
I don't know.
Don't come in here. I'm shifting.
But I know when I was a kid, I always thought it'd be way cooler to be a werewolf than a vampire. But now that I'm an adult, I see that like werewolves are always depicted as scumbags.
Yeah. I like a werewolf, man.
I thought it would be cool, right? Like, say you have a bully who's picking on you. You're like, all right, Jason the bully, he just wait. Let me look on the calendar. Yeah, there's a full moon coming up in about 2 weeks. I'm just going to go. I'm going to go, well, I can't beat him up now. I'm a kid. Or, you know, I'm getting bullied, but on a full moon, I can transform into this beast.
Imagine seeing little werewolves.
That'd
like, they
cool.
were like little dog size. Like, I'm talking like... Red healer size werewolves that are kids that are turning into werewolves.
And
right?
Why do they always turn into wolves? Like, why wouldn't they turn into like a corgi or something?
A were panther, like the ones on True Blood. It was your favorite.
A were shih tzu.
That's there you go. Right? There. Well, as long as we're talking about crazy encounters, I've got something even crazier for you. Y'all know the headlines grab me. I'm in a snake woman encountered by a jogger on a mountain trail.
Are you on T?
Right. Lon gets me every time. That son of a gun. It says, call it BS if you want, but this really happened. None of it, this is false or made up. In mid-2020, I was jogging on one of my favorite trails. No location given now. An 8 mile long hiking and mountain biking trail. I was around 3/4 of the way finished when I kept getting this weird feeling to look behind me. But after I checked, there was nothing. I was coming down the trail after around a long corner, and there's some thick brush and a stream on the edge. When I decided to look back just one more time, once again, nothing. Until I faced forward and almost stepped on a 2-foot-long snake sprawled across the trail. At the last moment, I dodged to the side, narrowly missing its head, and kept running. I don't harm things, I just don't do it. Well, about 2 minutes later, or maybe 5 minutes away from the end of the trail, I hear a woman shout, "Behind you!" My soul nearly left my body. Because I checked so many times and there was no one back there, then suddenly a woman appears. And I let her pass, and I noticed that she was attractive, and I couldn't help but watch her run ahead. She also had a weight vest on, as I did, but then I noticed something that gave me serious chills. Her shorts were not shorts. At first glance, they appeared to be tight snake printed jogging shorts, but as I stared, it looked more and more like snake skin from her waist down to the bottom of her butt. I mean, it was her skin. There was no shorts.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Is this guy some kind of perv or something?
Sounds like, a little
why
like
he's staring a little long. Like, you, right. Anybody can glance.
Right.
You're staring a little long.
But now you got the hard eye on her. You're like, you might want to back off, bro. But imagine seeing this. All of a sudden, you're like, that's not... Wait a second. Says she hit the end of the trail before I did. She went to an old white car and sat on the trunk staring at me as I walked to my truck.
Yeah, because she caught you glaring at her.
Right? And then you're like, come on, creeper. If I wasn't so freaked out, I would have said hi to her or it or whatever that was. But it was just too much all at once, so I left in a hurry. Did this woman manifest from the snake? I truly believe she did. I've only been back one time since then, and it's difficult to focus on running because I feel like something's out there, and it's very ominous.
Well, I think what's ominous is you jogging out there staring at women's shorts,
right?
Intently for a little too long, you know?
And
yeah. It's inappropriate.
But again, too, though, where did she come from? This person has been looking back and looking back and looking back, checking, right? And
yeah.
Running and checking and running. And all of a sudden, after dodging this snake, this woman appears with snake butt.
That is scary.
That is a little odd.
It is odd.
It's, but also too, man, come on, everybody can take a quick look, but dude, don't be glaring.
Yeah, there's like videos all over like TikTok and stuff where people are like filming themselves working out in the gym. Now, why they do that? I mean, come on.
You don't?
I don't even go to the gym.
Huh, the show.
Yeah. But then you'll like catch videos of people staring at them. And I'm like, well, yeah, but if you're kind of dressed like that and you're doing that exercise,
stop.
It's going to be hard not to get looks. Just but work out at your house.
You can look. A quick look. Whoa. And then just move on.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Some guys don't have that control, though.
Just move on. Stop being a creep.
I agree.
Look, if it's one of those awkward situations, eyes front, bro.
Yeah.
Eyes front. Don't look. Yes, no, and just walk out.
That's right. That's right.
Focus.
Speaking of creepy, we got another trash bag duende story.
Yes!
Cam checked us out. It says, hi, guys. I finally had to share this story after hearing one more trash bag duende story on a recent show. Feel free to use if you want to. We live in northern Arizona, in a rural area on the edge of several thousands of acres of grassland that locally they call a prairie. The prairie is very open, with scattered small pines and juniper bushes, and around the edge of the prairie is dense ponderosa pine forest. My husband and I live right next door to my mom. She's 81 and doesn't get around that well. I work from home and have a small office upstairs at her house so that I'm around to help out during the day. So this was back in January of this year. It was the 23rd, around 5:45 p.m. I was in my office and my mom was downstairs in her comfy chair, which faces out to a great view of this prairie. I was working on my computer and I suddenly heard her hollering for me. In a very alarmed tone, I ran downstairs thinking that either my dog was throwing up on the carpet or something was on fire. It was somewhere in that range of urgency. Now, let me add right here that she is very level-headed, not overly excitable, and 100% in her right mind and sharp as a tack.
Not our mothers.
And she can also see pretty darn far for being 81. So when I got to her, she was looking out on the prairie and said she saw something really weird. Later, she said it was the weirdest thing she's ever seen. While she was describing it, I grabbed a pair of binoculars and looked where she was pointing. She said that her first impression was that it was a horse, but then she immediately realized that it was not. She said it reminded her of a horse wearing a cape or a giant bat, and that it was nothing that she had ever seen before. It was tall, running upright on two legs, coming straight at her, very black in color, and had something flapping all around the upper part of it, like a cape fluttering. She said that although she didn't know what it was, she knew she really didn't like it and really didn't want it to get to the house. I could tell both at the time, and when she talked about it over the next several days, that it did rattle her quite a bit. Again, though, she's not at all prone to being nervous, and she does not share my interest in the strange and unusual. So, she said that she had looked up and spotted this thing coming her way, but then as she watched, it appeared to crouch down and disappear next to a bush. The terrain on this prairie rolls just a little, so that would be possible without it actually vanishing into thin air. As we were watching the area around that bush, my husband came in. We told him what was up, and he started watching too, when we all saw something again, just for a few seconds. It moved from where we were watching away to the right, where it disappeared again. Now, my husband says that what he saw could have been two ravens fighting. What I saw was very dark in color, and my first impression was something like a man running, but all hunched over, or maybe something like the back end of a bear. What my mom saw, and she didn't tell me this until weeks later, was an unnaturally tall and skinny black dog. The light was quite good at this point, and my husband went to get our little drone to fly the prairie and see what he could see. I went to an upstairs window with binoculars to see what I could see from a higher vantage point. Neither of us saw anything. Now, we do have black bears in the area, but I've never, in over 20 years, seen one out on the prairie in the daylight. Now, it's not impossible, but not likely, and even less likely that neither of us would have seen it moving away across the prairie. The next day, we went out to look at the spot where we had seen it, which was about 300 yards from Mom's window. The ground was wet and muddy, but we found no tracks, although we were leaving very obvious footprints. I went and stood next to the bush where Mom saw it crouched down, and then I called her to ask her to look and compare my height to what she had seen. She said it was 1.5 to 2 times taller than me, and I'm 5'4", making it 8 to 10.5 feet tall. No wonder she was freaked out. So, if it was a bear, it was running really well on its hind legs, and a waving cape over its head. For good measure, I also asked my mother if it could have possibly been an elk with a trash bag stuck in its antlers. She said no, absolutely not. All super weird, but here's the part of the story I really had to think about later. A couple of hours before all of that happened, I'd been out on the prairie with our dog for a daily walk. Now, she roams around, digs holes, occasionally chases a rabbit, but almost never barks. That afternoon, though, she started barking like crazy at something. Hackles up, staring off in the distance, and at one point came running back to me with her tail tucked, which was very unlike her. I couldn't see any reason for all of it, but it creeped me out just a little because I had just then been thinking about a recent interview I'd heard with Paul Sinclair, describing a dogman story from his latest Truth Proof book. Specifically, I was thinking about the idea of dogmen guarding portals, and also what I would do if I ever saw such a thing. So I did my thinking about it some more, and we aren't that far from Sedona. Did we have a portal drift up our way? A neighbor that we well know has absolutely believes that they've had some pretty interesting UFO sightings over the prairie, that same prairie the summer before. Maybe we have a full-time portal. Who knows? Anyway, thanks to you both for drawing these stories out of people and sharing them. It helps paint a better picture of all the weirdness out there and is fun for those of us who like to try to connect the dots. Best wishes, Kara. Well.
Wow.
So it kind of sounds like a dogman story. Also kind of sounds like a trash bag duende.
Horsefly is all I can think of.
Right?
A horse with a cape.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. I'm telling you, like, it reminds me of, like, the movie Spawn with his cape and how it's free-flowing. Or
I can't help but stop thinking about the thing my daughter and I saw.
Yeah.
Every time and all this stuff, and it's built to it. And it, again, I keep going back to this because we started receiving more and more of these stories about these trash bag dwindies or the dustbin dementors. Or so.
Yeah.
What is it about the ability to morph into refuse and blend? I don't know what's going on. And it makes you wonder how much of this has been going on that we just don't pay attention to. And now it's, again, people start talking about it, just like Glimmer Man or these other stories. And people realize, like, oh, man, I remember seeing something that's kind of like that.
Well, have you ever been in the ocean and you can see, like, a squid? Mm-hmm. And how it, like, it's kind of like hovering, but it's like it looks like it's pulsating,
mm-hmm.
its body. But that's kind of what I'm picturing, but in the air, not in the water.
Yes.
Like, whatever this is, it's moving. And like the one you saw up in the sky, you said it looked like
Spawn's cape by itself moving like
but not moving in a breeze.
Like, yes.
It wasn't being carried off by the wind.
No.
It was just maintaining its position.
And it was moving into the wind.
Saying.
And what you talk about, too, with like the cuttlefish or the octopus or the squid or any of that when they're moving. I love how they look like they're moving real fast, but they're not moving, right?
Yeah,
they're just,
no,
just running in place. I'm just cuttlefishing in place.
And it makes you think of the mantas that are the,
yes,
manta ray looking beings that's seen in the atmosphere and stuff. It's crazy.
God, I love it.
Speaking
love
of
it.
Crazy, let's take a break. And when we get back from the break, I'm going to be talking about some more strange stories from the road. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. I hope everybody out there is having a good day. I'm having a pretty good one. Very hot, though. I mean, I know I live in Texas and it does get hot, but for this, whatever reason, this summer seems to be unusually hot. I think we're already like 20-something days with it being over 100 in a row, and that can be brutal. But yeah, it's pretty bad. But I have my AC now, so I'm doing much better as long as I'm not outdoors. Unless it's early in the morning or late in the evening, we get out and play disc golf or something like that. So recently, for you that follow the show, me and my family just came back from a week-long trip in Alabama, down in Orange Beach, and we had a fantastic time. But while driving there, on our trip there, we drove and stopped in New Orleans, spent 2 days in New Orleans. And then we left there and drove to Orange Beach. Now, on the way home, we just drove straight through. This time, we didn't go through New Orleans. We took a more northerly route up through Baton Rouge and everything. And, you know, whenever I do a long road trip, especially to someplace I haven't been before, I love that. Like, I know that flying gets you there quicker, but there's something about a long road trip that makes it kind of fun. Just seeing all the little things you've never seen before, the small towns. And I can't help but think, and I thought about this several times while driving the family there and back, that how many of these small towns or how many of these roads have their own history, have their own folklore? Because I know that my hometown has multiple stories and strange things and legends. And I know that all of you out there listening, your towns do too. So whenever I'm on a long road trip, I can't help but think while I'm driving, like, I wonder what mysteries this town holds, or I wonder anything paranormal happened around here. And when I start thinking about that, I start thinking about stuff to talk about on the next show. So on today's show, I'm going to get into some more strange sightings on the road and from people who have had some strange things happen to them while out traveling. Check this out. This first story says, this happened to my aunt and me when I was about 7 years old. I'm not sure what the exact date was, but I know it was in the mid to late 1990s. My aunt and I were driving back from the mall, which was located 30 miles from the town where we lived. There's a four-lane highway there now, but at the time of this story, there was only a two-lane road that we could ride on since the highway wasn't there yet. We were driving back, and we were about halfway home when we saw a car pulled off to the side of the road. Since my auntie didn't really see a lot of cars driving on the road and the sun was beginning to set, she decided to pull over and see if this person needed any help. My aunt was 17 or 18 years old at the time, and she wasn't really the type of person to really do this type of thing, but she pulled over anyways. We both noticed that there was an elderly woman standing by the car. We stopped the car a few car spaces ahead of the woman's car. My aunt got out and said she would be right back. Since I was a little kid, I really didn't have much interest in sitting around waiting, so I vaguely remember sitting up and watching my aunt walk over to the woman. I remember being confused when my aunt stopped in her tracks and turned around. She seemed kind of irritated as she walked back, and she opened the driver's door again and sat down. She looked at me and was like, "I could have sworn there was an old woman in a car out there. You saw it too, right?" I remember just staring at her, not really knowing why she was asking this. I had just watched her start walking back to the woman and saw her turn around while the woman was still there by her car. I meekly nodded my head and we both turned our heads to the back of the car, and sure enough, the car was there. My aunt sighed heavily and said something along the lines of, "It wasn't there a minute ago." She kept staring, and I said something about how maybe the woman was driving away before she got out of the car. But there was no way the woman could have driven away and back in the matter of seconds. There were no side roads except maybe a half mile down the road. My aunt told me to come with her this time. We both got out of the car, and before I took more than a few steps, the car and the old lady had disappeared. We both looked around in disbelief, and my aunt groaned in annoyance. She walked back to our car and said, "She can help herself now." I remember looking back as I pulled open the passenger door, and there was still no car there. As we sat down and started the car, I heard a loud screech. I looked around frantically, and sure enough, my aunt heard it too, because she was doing the same thing. She looked into the rearview mirror and swore in a scared tone of voice as she put the car into drive. She seemed panicky and almost shaky as we drove off. I turned around to look out the back window, and the car and the old woman were there. The old woman seemed as though she was running at us, but by at this point, we were already a distance down the road. To this day, my aunt and I aren't sure what happened and whether or not the woman was real or just a product of our imagination. It felt real, though, and we both definitely saw her. When we tell people this story, most people either laugh it off or say that we're lying. Some believe us. All I know is that the car disappeared whenever one or both of us got out of the car, but I don't know where it would go in a time span of only a few milliseconds, especially since the woman appeared to be in her 80s or 90s. I've wondered if maybe the old woman was just a moment in time replaying itself that my aunt and I just happened to witness. But then, why would she scream and chase us? Wow. That is a creepy story. I don't know. Perhaps you're right. Maybe it is like, you know, a time slip or something. You hear these tales where people see a phantom hitchhiker or something, and for whatever reason, that same hitchhiker is seen for decades. You know, people over the years see the same thing. Like, why is history replaying that scene? Like a movie. How does that even work? Why are not all scenes replayed? I don't know. But I like those kind of stories. Check this one out. It says, in the summer of 1975, I was 14 years old. Eight of us were bored on a hot summer evening. So someone suggested that we have a seance. One of my friends missed his brother, who was killed in Vietnam in 1970. So the leader of the seance called to the spirit of Steve, who was the deceased brother. He then asked for a sign if Steve's spirit was being present, then asked, if so, for the house lights to go off, which right then they did. I thought this was just a trick, not a sign. I asked for a 1955 Chevy to drive up by the front of the house. No sooner were the words out of my mouth when we heard screeching rubber. We broke the circle and looked out the front window to see a 1955 blue Chevy speeding by with no driver visible. We ran out of the front door, jumped on our 10-speed bikes, and followed the taillights. We were happy to see the Chevy make a left turn, knowing the road was a dead end. When we arrived at the dead end shortly after, we found no car there. We even knocked on doors asking about it, and no one had seen or heard anything. Never saw that car again. Strange, because it was our neighborhood, and the city we lived in was small, only about 12,000 people at the time. So, if that car would have been around, we would have seen it. This creeped me out. Brian Nolan. Well, Brian, thank you for the strange story. That is odd. Did your deceased brother somehow reach out and grant your wish just to let you know he was there? That he was still watching you? Keeping an eye on you? I don't know. Or was it all imagined? Or was it a strange coincidence? I don't know. But I mean, it couldn't have been real, right? Because the car went down a dead end road. How would it have gotten out of there? I don't know. Bizarre. Check this one out. It says, this happened when my two sisters and I were on a road trip to the West Coast. We had many strange experiences on this trip. We were traveling through Washington State along the Columbia Gorge to visit our cousin in Idaho. From Seattle, we went down the coast to Astoria, Oregon. After we left Astoria, it was the evening, and we were looking for a hotel. The sun was setting, but we could still see the sun on the ocean. It was beautiful. All of a sudden, this huge fog bank rolled in. We saw a small sailboat in front of this fog bank, and we thought, well, they're kind of running along in front of the fog. You could see the front of the boat through the fog at times, and then the fog would get very thick and dark, and then it would get a little thinner. Suddenly, the fog started to get darker and darker. Even the atmosphere changed. It felt like there was an electric charge in the air. We were all looking at this strange fog when suddenly a ship came out of it. It looked like the legendary Flying Dutchman. The ship had three masts. It was huge. It came out of the dark fog, ran along the front of it for just a few seconds, and then went right back into the fog bank. I grabbed my camera, hoping the ship would come out again. I did get a picture of the sun behind the fog just a few seconds after the ship had gone back into it. So at least I have that. But no Flying Dutchman, no ship. I think the thick fog somehow allowed the ghost ship to manifest. Both my sisters and I saw it, and we couldn't believe what we were seeing. Cheryl. Well, Cheryl, that is a pretty cool story. I love stories like that, phantom ghost ships. We've done episodes on that before. We even had a caller call in one time, who was a Navy guy. His job was observing things with binoculars. Now, I don't know the actual title of his position. And he was on a ship. And on this ship that he worked on, they were refueling things. So they would refuel battleships, aircraft carriers, destroyers, things like that. And not only did he have a possible sighting of a megalodon, but he also had a strange sighting one time with fog out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. And he said that, you know, fog is common around land, but it's not very common out there, not far off. And he said in that fog, he saw an ancient Chinese ship, like really old, really old. And, you know, he didn't see a skeleton crew or anything aboard operating it or anything like that, just the ship. But it was very, very, very old. And he watched it a few minutes and then it kind of disappeared in the fog and the fog lifted. And, you know, that was it. And it's like, wow, you know, what is that? A time slip? I mean, a phantom ship? I don't know. I wish I could see something like that. That would be really cool, right? Like, I don't want to see a dog man. I don't want to see, you know, some horrible looking rake or something like that. But a phantom ghost ship? That would be pretty awesome. Moving on, check this one out. It says, I was hauling a load of lumber through eastern West Virginia, out of Virginia, when I experienced something that I can only describe as a Twilight Zone event. There are no ghosts in this story, but that only adds to the eeriness of it. I have been a trucker for many years and have put many miles behind me. Over those years, I picked up a load of lumber in Northern Virginia and was traveling Route 55, a two-lane road through West Virginia, on my way home for the weekend. Now, Route 55 goes through Petersburg, Moorefield, and Seneca Rocks, West Virginia. I remember crossing a covered steel bridge over the Lost River. I knew that I would be in Baker in just a short amount of time. I had planned on stopping in Baker for a soft drink and a short break, you know, to get out, stretch my legs. I was pretty tired, and that is probably why I was sidetracked. I don't remember making any turnoffs or exits from Route 55. Once I reached Seneca Rocks, I was going to head west on 33 towards Elkins, and from there, it was only an hour and a half to home. After I crossed the bridge, I noticed that I had been driving for an awful long time. The trip from Baker to Moorefield is only about 30 minutes. When I looked at my watch, I had been driving about 3 hours longer than it should have taken me. As I was driving along, I noticed that I was on a strange road. This wasn't Route 55 that I had driven time and time again. I was having to pull hills that weren't there before, and used the low side of the transmission. It was taking me an excessive amount of time to drive this strange road. Up one side and down the other, out of one curve, only to go into another. I started to get angry, started to get mad. I was starting to beat myself up. I couldn't believe that I allowed myself to get so tired driving that I somehow made a wrong turn and ended up lost on a wrong road. I quickly grabbed my road map. In only a few minutes, I found that I must have been heading back to Virginia via a different route. Route 258, I think. This was really going to put me behind schedule. And I was furious with myself. How stupid was I? I looked at the map and tried to find an alternate route back to Moorefield. The only roads on the map were dirt roads through the hills. There was no way I was going to try to drive a 60-foot tractor trailer through the woods. The only way to get back on track was to go on to Virginia and pick up Route 28 back to Seneca Rocks, or find a place to turn around and backtrack to where I made the wrong turn. This is when I realized something was wrong. As I drove along, I noticed that the road was unusually smooth. No potholes, no rough places at all. I looked for a wide place or a driveway or something big enough to turn around. There wasn't a wide place or driveway anywhere. There were no guide rails. Though this road was hilly and curvy, this didn't make any sense. It was so curvy that my trailer was crossing way over the center of the road in every curve, and I was having to drive across the center of the road so my trailer didn't go off the road on the other side. This is when I noticed that there were no yellow painted center lines or white painted edge lines. Where in the hell was I? The longer I drove, the weirder it got. There were no road signs, no mailboxes, no utility poles, no wildlife, and worst of all, for 3 hours of driving, I never met or saw one single other vehicle. I grabbed my map again and tried to determine where I was. As I looked at my map, I noticed I would be coming to a small town called Matthias, and then, just a few short miles more, I would go through another small town called Lost River. I finally saw a sign that read Matthias. I was relieved. I thought I was no longer lost, for I was at least on the road to Route 28, even though I would be late. As I entered Matthias, I expected to see houses, cars, and maybe some people, a post office, and a store or two. But there was nothing. No driveways, no homes, no stores, no people, no cars, no painted lines, no road signs, no mailboxes, nothing. I thought it was very strange. But a lot of places in West Virginia have just a sign designating a town, and a few miles later, there would be all these things. The next thing I saw was a sign that read, Lost River. I pondered for a moment and wondered what happened to Matthias, or Matthias. As I continued to drive along the Lost River, it didn't have any homes, no mailboxes or anything, nothing. Just this incredibly smooth paved road with no painted lines or guide rails. I grabbed my map again, and I was relieved that in about 30 minutes or so, I would finally make it to the intersection of Route 28. I had been driving on this road for at least 3 hours, and I was really getting tired. About the time I expected to reach 28, I looked up ahead, and I finally reached a town with cars, people, homes, utility poles, and yes, even painted lines on the road. To my amazement, I was in Moorfield. I was flabbergasted. Why did it take me over 6 hours to drive a 3-hour trip through this stretch of road? Before anyone thinks I went to sleep and miraculously made the drive half-conscious, when I checked the mileage on the odometer, I had driven 70 miles and 3 hours out of my way. And when I entered Moorfield, I was on Route 55. I had never left Route 55. I never made a wrong turn. But I was definitely on a road in the twilight zone. And I shudder to think what might have happened if I had stopped anywhere on this road and gotten out of the truck. If I had stopped, it would have been in the middle of the road because there wasn't even a wide enough place on the road to pull off. As an old trucker friend of mine had a weird look on his face one time when I told him about this strange drive, he looked like he saw a ghost. He told me that when he was driving a truck many years ago, he had heard stories that were similar to mine that happened along the same stretch of road. But he didn't personally know any of these other drivers. So he dismissed it as an old trucker story. My friend told me that there was something weird about that area of West Virginia. He told me about his experience. He said he was driving his pickup truck on Route 28 towards Seneca Rocks. He knew he would be at Seneca Rocks in about 15 minutes from where he was at. He had driven this area time and time again, and had spent a large part of his life in Romney at a school for the deaf, so he was very familiar with the area. He said that in the time that you snap your fingers, he was from where he was to Seneca Rocks. It happened so fast that he slammed on his brakes and slid out of the road and almost crashed. Shaken up, he got out of his pickup and walked over to the little store there to calm down and get a soft drink. This is when he looked at the clock on the wall and looked at his watch. He had gotten to Seneca Rocks 15 minutes early, for his watch was 15 minutes slower than the clock on the wall. In July, a couple years after my strange experience, I took my wife to visit her family in Virginia. On the way back home, I told my family I was going to take them through the Twilight Zone. I had just had to go back to this place to see where I was. As we went through the steel bridge, I described that this was the last thing I remembered seeing until I reached Moorfield. When we got to Baker, I made a left turn on 258 and told my family that I don't remember making this turn in my truck, but I must have. In about 20 minutes, we got to Matthias, and to my surprise, there were houses everywhere. Cars, people, and 258 had painted lines the whole way. I want to note that when I was in the truck, the road was smooth, but it was not freshly paved. About 9 miles more, we made it to Lost River, and there were stores, there was a post office, there were homes, people, cars. I couldn't believe it. I said, I swear, these things weren't here before. I don't remember the name of the state park on down the road from Lost River, but I told my family that we would drive that road to Moorfield. It goes through the woods, and it must have been the road I was on. When we got to the park, there is a gigantic sign that reads, "No trucks." Now, I know that if I had seen that sign, I would not have continued on in the truck. We drove several miles on this road, and it seemed eerily familiar. But there were wide places. There were mailboxes and scattered homes. I told my family that I had to have been on this road in the truck, but I didn't know how. After we crested the last hill, I realized that there was no way I could have driven my truck on this road. About halfway down this hill, there was a switchback, and there was no way I could have pulled my trailer around it. No way. It would have taken dozers and wreckers to slide the trailer around this curve, and it probably would have done extreme damage to the truck and trailer. So I determined that this is not the road I drove down. When we reached the end of this road, it intersected with another road that leads into Moorfield from a different direction. Then I knew that I did not drive my truck on that road through the woods. And to this day, I do not know where I was at. Lakin, Eubank. Lakin, I mean, this is a time slip. That's exactly what happened. And you're right, it is much like the Twilight Zone. I've heard many people have the same thing where they were driving and then they somehow were in a different town, sometimes older, never newer for whatever reason, but older, like, you know, abandoned. And that's exactly what I think happened. That is an incredible story. Now, I got one more. This is a story. I've told this story before, but it's been a long, long time, like probably 8 years ago. And it has to do with a celebrity that had a very strange encounter. Now, this celebrity, for you youngsters, you may not know who Telly Savalas is. But for you older listeners, you're going to know exactly who that is. This was Telly's story. Check this out. Who loves you, baby? That phrase was heard everywhere in the 1970s. It was the trademark of Kojak, TV's bald, lollipop-licking New York City police detective, portrayed by the charismatic actor Telly Savalas. Born on January 22, 1922, in Garden City on Long Island, New York, the popular TV and film actor was the son of Greek Americans. His father owned a restaurant, and his mother was an artist. Young Telly served as a soldier in World War II, then worked in a variety of jobs, as a lifeguard, as a newspaper vendor, and for a time, a journalist for ABC News. All down-to-earth, real-world jobs. It was this background that Savalas was able to bring so effectively to his signature role as Lieutenant Theo Kojak. Telly's first acting experience was in episodic television, but by 1962, he had also began to branch out into movies, appearing in such films as Cape Fear and giving an Oscar-nominated supporting performance in The Birdman of Alcatraz. He shaved his head for his standout role as Pontius Pilate in the 1965's The Greatest Story Ever Told. And it was such a strong, distinctive look that he kept it throughout his long career. He became known for playing tough guys with a soft streak or an edgy sense of humor. So the role of Kojak was an easy fit for him. Little wonder he was identified with it for the remainder of his life. Even for actors, there's always a definite line between reality and the world of make-believe. But all of that changed for Savalas when he had a life-altering brush with the unknown. The encounter haunted the actor until he died in 1994. One day, after his 72nd birthday, his experience was one of the rarest of ghost phenomenon. He was actually a passenger in a phantom car. That's right, folks. He was a passenger in a phantom car. When you think of Long Island, the first thing that comes to mind usually isn't a dark, deserted highway. After all, the island's western boundary is just across the narrow band of the East River from downtown Manhattan, home to more than 1.5 million souls. On Long Island itself, you'll find another 4 million people living in just the Bronx and in Brooklyn. But as you move farther out on the island, away from the New York City limits, the cities shrink into towns and small communities. Some are little more than villages. By the time you reach Montauk, at the island's easternmost shore, you'll find a mere 4,000 local residents living there year-round. It was near one of these unexpected rural enclaves in early 1957 that the story took place. Driving home from a cousin's house on Long Island, late one night, or more accurately, early one morning, Savalas noticed that his gas tank was almost empty. "Please," he thought, "don't run out of gas, man. It's 3 a.m. Long after sensible people on that part of the island were in bed, and it was pouring down rain. If only he could make it the last few miles home. But then his engine started to sputter. He was riding on fumes. Slowly, he eased his car into the shoulder of the road as the engine died. Putting his shirt collar up over his head, he got out into the downpour. His eyes searched down the lonely stretch, first one way, then the other. As he feared, nothing, except for that light. Although he could hardly make it out through the rain, way, way off in the distance was a red neon sign. Then he remembered that he had passed a diner on his way to his cousin's house. That must be it. He started out on a soggy jog towards the glow. When he got to the diner, his heart sank. In those days, many roadside stores had gas pumps out front, and he had hoped that he might find one standing by this diner, but no such luck. Worse yet, there were no cars out front. Sure, the lights were on, but was the place even open? Shaking his clothes, Savalas stepped inside onto the linoleum floor. It was a typical 1950s diner. A long counter with stools across from the entrance and the usual rows of red-backed booths. Through the small window to the kitchen, Telly could see a man at the grill wearing a small white paper hat and a grease-soaked apron. A lone waiter stood behind the counter reading. Otherwise, the diner was completely empty. Little wonder, thought Savalas, who in his right mind would be out this time of night in this kind of weather. "Can I help you?" "Yes," Savalas said, and without going into too much detail, he asked if there was an all-night gas station anywhere in the area. The waiter gave Savalas directions to a garage less than a mile down the road. "I'd be happy to give you my lift myself," the counter kid offered, "but as you can see, it's just me and the guy in the back. Good luck, mister." And with that, having decided the soaked man standing in front of him wasn't going to stay long enough even for a hot cup of coffee, the waiter turned his back to his magazine. Savalas walked back out into the rain, already soaked. He started to run in the direction that the young man had pointed. He had gotten only a few blocks, however, when a long, sleek, black Cadillac pulled up beside him. It slowed and stopped. With all the rain streaming down the car's windows, Savalas could barely tell that if anyone was even inside. But then the driver slowly rolled down the window and shouted, "Hey man, do you need a lift?" Telly wasn't used to hitchhiking, and he wasn't really in the mood to deal with a stranger. But under the circumstances, well, he figured beggars couldn't be choosers. He opened the door and got in. Immediately he felt the warmth inside of the car. He said he felt it envelop him, and he was glad to finally be somewhere he could start to dry off. The driver had a calm, reassuring voice as he asked, "Where are you headed?" Savalas explained what had happened, and as they quietly rode toward the gas station, Telly let his eyes take in the driver. He was immaculately dressed, he said, in a slightly dated black tuxedo with a crisply pressed white shirt and a bow tie. His black hair was neatly combed back, and he wore a perfectly trimmed mustache. With that getup, thought Savalas, he could easily have been a stand-in for Fred Astaire in any of those old MGM movies. Finally, Telly's curiosity got the better of him. He said, "Man, mister, you're dressed up pretty swanky for this type of night. If you don't mind me asking, where are you heading?" In a low monotone, with just the slightest hint of sorrow, the driver simply stated, "To the crossroads." Involuntarily, Savalas shivered. The crossroads? What was that supposed to mean? Was this guy a loony? Telly was beginning to have second thoughts about having gotten into this car, when much to his relief, the service station came into sight. The stranger pulled his car into the lot. Savalas reached into his pocket to offer the accommodating driver some money for his trouble and panicked. His wallet was missing. Mentally retracing the events of the evening, he quickly realized that he had left the billfold back at his cousin's house. Not only couldn't he give the stranger any money to thank him, he couldn't even pay for any gas for his own car. Oh well, that was his problem, not the stranger's. Savalas apologized for not being able to offer him anything. "But give me your name and address, and I promise I'll put something in the mail." The man hesitated. "Nah, man, I'm just happy to get you out of the rain, and I'm glad that the gas station was open." In fact, the driver reached into his coat and pulled out a dollar bill and handed it to Savalas. "Perhaps you can use this for some gas." Now Savalas really felt stuck. He needed the money, or he'd been trapped in the garage until morning when he could call someone to give him a lift home, but he couldn't accept money from a complete stranger. Telly agreed to take the cash, but only, he insisted, if the driver would let him repay him. Reluctantly, the man agreed. He said his name was Harry Agonis, and he hastily scribbled down his address and phone number and handed it to Savalas. Well, without another word, Telly dashed to the door of the service station. He turned to wave goodbye to the man who had come to his aid, but the Cadillac was already gone. It was almost as if the car had disappeared into thin air. It wasn't until a few days later that Savalas found the paper with the phone number stuffed into the bottom of his pocket. When he called, it wasn't Harry's voice that answered. However, it was a woman's. "Hello? Is this Miss Agonis? May I speak with Harry?" There was silence on the other end for what seemed like an eternity. Then a clearly agitated voice rang out. "Is this some kind of joke? Who is this?" Taken aback, Telly rushed to explain that he had met her husband a few nights before and that Harry had helped him out. "He wrote down his name and number on a piece of paper and..." She cut him off. "That's impossible. My husband, Harry, is dead. He's been dead for 3 years. And then a dial tone. She hung up. "Dead? Dead for 3 years? Savalas mulled over what he just heard. How could that be true? And if it was, who had picked him up? Maybe that would explain why the man hadn't wanted to give Telly his name. After all, the guy was all dressed up, driving out there alone in the middle of the night, and heading to the crossroads. Who knows where he actually was heading, or why he wanted to keep his identity a secret? As the days went on, Savalas began to feel guilty. Clearly, he had upset the woman who had answered the phone, but they had both been victims of a tasteless prank. He didn't want to call her back, figuring it would only distress her more, getting another unwanted phone call. So, as awkward as the confrontation would be, Telly resolved to meet Miss Agonis face to face to say he was sorry. He drove to the address the man had written down. With some trepidation, he walked up the sidewalk to the front door of the home and knocked. As soon as Miss Agonis opened the door, he rushed into the speech he had prepared. "Hi, ma'am. My name is Telly Savalas. I'm the one who called the other day." He wasn't trying to be funny or cruel. He thought that they might both be the butt of a nasty practical joke. She looked at the actor for a moment and could see his sincerity in his eyes. She widened the door and invited him inside. As they sat down, Telly handed her the paper the mysterious driver had given him. Miss Agonis's hands started to shake, and the tears welled up in her eyes. "Where did you... How could you have gotten this? Savalas was puzzled. Hadn't he just explained? You don't understand, Mr. Savalas. This is Harry's handwriting. Stunned, Telly objected. That couldn't be possible. Then, as Savalas described the man who had given him a lift, his wardrobe and the car, Miss Agnes stood, without a word. Almost as if in a trance, she walked across the room and removed a well-worn album from a weathered bookcase. She sat down next to Savalas and started to flip through the pictures. This was my Harry. Savalas recognized him instantly. It was the same man, proudly standing next to a black, shiny Cadillac. In a soft, dreamlike voice, she told her story. She said Harry died in that car 3 years ago. He had been at a party, wearing that musty old tuxedo of his, and he was driving home around 3 a.m, out of the crossroads, about a mile down the road from where that gas station is that you mentioned. His car was hit by a truck, and my Harry was killed. The two of them sat speechless, considering the implications of what she had just told him. The conclusion was inescapable. For at least one night, Harry had returned. A phantom driver had paused just long enough to give a hitchhiker a hand before returning to his destiny at the crossroads. Had it happened before? And would Harry ever return to help anyone else? Savalas was never to find out, for he swore to himself at that moment, and he kept his promise, never to accept a ride on that haunted highway again. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. Back with Expanded Perspectives.
Yes.
Strange stories seen from the road, including Telly Savalas' story. We did that story a long time ago, mm-hmm. about 9 years ago, and I came across it again. I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about that story. So it was interesting to, like, you've heard lots of stories where people pick up a hitchhiker and it turns out the hitchhiker was a ghost, but you don't find many stories where the person is hitchhiking and a car stops to pick them up, yeah. and that car and person is a ghost. So very.
Wish you listened to is it David Allen Coe's The Ride?
Yeah, right.
Remember?
Yeah, and I like the sighting too, where they saw this fog roll in over the sea, and then out of that fog came what looked like the Flying Dutchman, like an old ship. And then I even talked about how our friend Craig, long time ago, called yep. into the show and not only had a sighting of like a megalodon, but saw that ancient Chinese ship roll out of a fog, which he said the fog usually is around land. It shouldn't be out that far at sea. I need to find that interview and re-air that. Maybe next week I'll re-air that.
So we've always talked about it. The fog is bad news, man. That's like a paranormal elevator. Like you can eat out, man. It just feels like you can pass through right there. That's the edge, right? Anytime there's a fog or a mist rolls in, it's never good.
Yeah, no.
Never good.
I'm actually talking to an author right now who wrote a book about the fog and the paranormal stuff. Oh. And I think we might have him on soon so we can talk about all that. Cam?
Yes, sir.
What do you got planned for the rest of your week?
Well, not much, but you know what I got to get going on this weekend? I have to paint some Necrons for our DM. He asked me to paint his Necron army. And so for those of you that don't know, I've quietly morphed into a miniature commission painter, all the painting that I've been doing lately. So, yeah, now I'm painting a Necron army this weekend.
Oh, boy. Now he's getting into Warhammer 40K.
Yeah, I'm not playing it. Oh. I've never played it.
You're just offering your painting
but
skills.
But I'm just going to paint them, yeah.
I got another cool story before we get out of here about a possible shadow person. And this comes from the Kiwis down there in New Zealand. It says, Kia ora, Kyle and Cam. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I don't know Maori.
Yeah.
But Kia ora, Kyle and Cam, I'm a huge fan of the show, and I want to share with you something that happened to my son last month. My son is 26 and is a builder. in Invercargill, New Zealand. Now, we live in Te Anu, which is about 2 hours away.
How far is that from Brokenwood? Because I watch Brokenwood Mysteries. Y'all gonna be pretty close to that, right? Now, beautiful over there.
I have no idea. He said he was working here in Te Anu for the week with a workmate at a hotel. Now, Brent has a twin brother, and they both have had similar experiences before on the same night. This is Brent's story, word for word. Kia kaha, Catherine. I don't know what that means, Catherine, but I'm sure it's nice. It says, I'm working with Tia Anu for the week. It's early Tuesday morning. I haven't slept well. My shoulder still hurts. I hear what I think is the cavity sliding door to my room opening. I think in my head, what the heck does my workmate want this early? I remember feeling annoyed because I thought my workmate was invading my space too early in the morning. I also think it's strange because it's still dark. If he wanted my attention, surely he would turn on the lights or knock first. I turn my eyes to the door, but this is all I am able to do. I can't move. I can't speak or respond in any way. It's like there's a heavy weight over my entire body. At this point, my heart is beating a little faster than normal. I can see a figure open the slider slightly, enter the room, and move from the doorway to beside my bed in the darkness. I can only describe it as a pure black figure with a big head. It is pretty tall as well. No facial features at all. It stands there looking at me for a second before uttering a low noise. But not yelling. Just a low vocal noise. At this point, I have a terrible feeling of doom and defenselessness, like something bad will happen that I can't stop. I begin struggling against this force holding me down. Although paralyzed, it takes incredible effort. I try to yell, you know, to get out of here. I try to jump out of bed, but I can't. It disappears after a few minutes, and I get up and look at my phone, and it's 5:45 a.m., 15 minutes before my alarm is set to go off. After it's gone, I don't feel like I woke up. I felt like I was awake the whole time, but I definitely felt the weight lift from me, and it was all over. Man. So, this sounds like old hag syndrome. This sounds like sleep paralysis. Mm-hmm. This sounds like shadow beings or the Hat Man. And it also kind of sounds like alien abduction. All of those things are all combined into several stories. So I don't know what it is. I don't know if people that experience sleep paralysis also have a high propensity for having shadow being sightings, alien abductees, things like that. I don't know. But it could be one of those or multiple of those.
Well, it was like it was coming in there. So something was coming in to check or to look or I don't know. That's disturbing. The worst part about it is like when you can't move, that completely defenseless feeling of like, uh-oh.
I've had a few times where I felt like I had sleep paralysis. Like I remember like consciously, like I can't move, but like I never experienced any like something in the room or anything like that.
I've never had it.
I mean, for me, it wasn't scary because I didn't feel scared.
Because nothing was open.
I was just like, oh, I want to roll over and I can't roll over. That's what it felt like. I never felt fear.
It wasn't like a shadow man standing at the foot of your bed just glaring at you. Yeah, see, that would have changed everything,
yeah, but
right?
Speaking of fear and speaking of New Zealand, our Kiwi friend John Danaher coaches a scary fella named Gordon Ryan. And we just watched the match yesterday. That guy, he's known as the King. There's a reason, folks, right?
Yeah, Gordon is unbelievable at jiu-jitsu.
It's amazing. He's got another match coming up, and the ADCC finals are coming up, so I can't wait to tune in for that.
I want to go to New Zealand bad.
I do too. Just after
beautiful.
The filming of Lord of the Rings, yes. And watching those guys hunt for chamois and tar and stuff there up there in the mountains,
and
it always looks
cool.
And all
the fly fishing out there, and it's just a beautiful place.
I think it's because they have such a small population.
Maybe people, we ought to move there. Can we move there?
I think it's really hard to immigrate there.
Yeah, but we're pretty good guys.
Well, I know.
But I mean, seriously, we're pretty good dudes. You think they won't let us in? Maybe
you might have to get a divorce and marry a Kiwi.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. You could do that. Would you go down in age?
No, gosh, no, man. Are you kidding? I need to marry a nurse or a doctor for somebody to take care of me when I get old.
You need a sugar mama. That's what you're saying?
I need someone that knows medicine.
Oh, I got you.
Because I'm falling apart, man.
Right? That's hilarious. What else you got planned for the rest of your week?
I do not know. I've got to help my son. I got some stuff with the grandbaby. I don't know, man. I've got a lot of things popping around, a lot of gears moving, but nothing nailed down. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, of course, we're trying to dodge this heat. It's been brutal down here. I've about had enough of it. I think we've got, what is it? It's like 102 today. We had a little reprieve one day, and I think it's like 102 or 103, and then it's supposed to not get below 102 until, I think, another 10 or 12 days. It'll be between 102 and 105 or something. So, yeah, we've got another run of it over 100 down here now. So,
man.
It's not fun outdoors. You got to do a lot of stuff in the morning.
We need to move to the coast.
We need to move to New Zealand.
Yeah, no doubt.
That's what I'm trying to say, man.
Before we get out of here, let's thank our sponsors. HelloFresh. If you just go to HelloFresh.com/expanded16 and use the code expanded16, you'll get 16 free meals and 3 free gifts.
And Lumi Labs.
That's right. Don't forget about Lumi Labs. They are awesome. I'm trying to find the promo code here. Just go to microdose.com and use the promo code expanded. That's EXPANDED to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Links can be found in the show notes, or you can just Google it yourself. Also, if you want to share a story with me and Cam, you can email the show expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show 888-393-2783. Until next time, folks, that's about all the time we have for this episode. Be safe. I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.